Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Fumbles the football. Malcolm Willis is on top of it. Penn State recovers. Deion Barnes forced it. What a play by Barnes. His third forced fumble of the year, and Malcolm Willis gets the takeaway. Play action. Back goes McGloin. Long and deep. Wide open. Brandy Mosby-Felder at the 10 to the 5. First and goal, Penn State. Brandon Mosby-Felder with the 43-yard play. Two tight ends. Zordich left side to the 5, to the goal line. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions get the score from Michael Zordich. His second rushing touchdown of the year, seventh of his career, and Penn State takes the lead.
Good Monday afternoon, everyone. Great to have you with us. Today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can always go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the beautiful Sunbury Motors studio the day before the election. And again, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And we are going to be your election-free zone for the next couple of hours on the Let It Be Solar hotline at 1-800-795-9565. You can always go to LetItBeSolar.com. Yes, that's tomorrow, but today we talk sports. Steelers and Giants yesterday. Penn State, of course, Purdue now. The Nittany Lions get ready for Nebraska Saturday at 3:30 at Memorial Stadium in Lincoln. Looking forward to that. But the basketball season also opens up on Friday night. So we have a lot going on this week. We're going to have Greg Sharp, the play-by-play voice of Nebraska football. He'll join us on the show. Dick Girardia will join us later in the week to talk about the opening of the basketball season. So we have a lot going on. Nate Mink and Ben Jones from Steakhouse.com will be here on Wednesday. And tomorrow, the press conference of Bo Pelini and also Bill O'Brien. So plenty going on in this big week. Yes, the election's tomorrow, but for me, the excitement is Friday, Saturday. Basketball Friday night in the Jordan Center, football Saturday in Lincoln, with a little jet trip in between on Saturday morning. That's at least the plan we have in mind. I know Learfield's nervous about the plan, but I wanted to do both games. All right. Before we get to any of that, time out for Above the Noise. Here's Dan Patrick. All right, great to have you with us on this Monday, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can always go to purdyinsurance.com. 3:35, Bo Pelini's press conference. We'll have that for you from Lincoln. Get everybody up to date on what Nebraska thinks about Nebraska. Coming off their second dramatic come-from-behind win on the road. They did so at Northwestern, and they did so at Michigan State. And, of course, there was a call in that game, a pass interference call, that many in the big and many at Michigan State are not enamored with, very unhappy about it. And there are a lot of Steeler fans, by the way, very unhappy about how yesterday's game was officiated. And Kevin was one of them. I received three texts from him yesterday on officiating. What gets me is I hear people talk, and they act as if the fix is in. And I always find it to be bizarre when I hear that stuff. Do you think seven guys sit in a room and say, oh, okay, you know, they just went through a hurricane here in New York, so I think we're going to let the Giants win. Hey, you think people do that? Of course not. Do people make mistakes? Yes. Do coaches make mistakes? Yes. Do players make mistakes? Yes. Do announcers make mistakes? Yes. Do fans make mistakes? Oh, absolutely. But I sit there and I hear stuff like that, and I just sit back and go, what are you complaining about? I find it bizarre. I mean, I realize that, you know, complaining about officiating. Okay, I got it. I understand that part. You're complaining about the officials. But it's too much. And why is it, you know, have you ever asked yourself why Jack and I don't complain about officials all that often? Because there's no need to. Okay? You call it. You mention it's significant. You go to the next play. There's instant replay now that helps you overcome certain things. Now, judgment calls? No, it doesn't help you overcome a judgment call. You know, the play in the end zone, Victor Cruz, Ryan Clark, well, that's a bad call. No getting around it. No getting around. It's a bad call. He hit him low, hit him in the ribs. Ball had been hit. He's allowed to hit him. It's a, you know, what Ryan Clark did was a completely legitimate play, and it's a bad call. But still, I've had Steeler fans say the fix was in, they had to overcome the officiating. Overcome what? You won a Super Bowl on bad officiating, for goodness sakes. I mean, the Super Bowl between the Steelers and the Seahawks was the single poorest big game I've ever seen officiated. And the team that got the benefit of almost every call in that game won it. So I don't want to hear about the fixes in against you because you've already won a Super Bowl already. It's a great franchise, well-managed, smart, great fans. Nobody travels better than they do. But don't think the fix is in for you. Come on. If they're having a bad day, they're having a bad day. You know, I've had people tell me that they think Big Ten referees are against Penn State. I've heard that so much now in 20 years. And I sit there and go, you know what? Have I seen bad calls go against Penn State? Yes. Have I seen them get the benefit of a call here or there? Yes. I mean, look, bad calls, the thing at Michigan. Okay. There's no doubt Jason Avant's out of bounds. Bad call. The 2 seconds put on the clock. Bad call. Okay. They have Ohio State beat, ball thrown over the middle, hits the chest, bounces, hits the ground, bounces back up, and it's called a catch. Bad call. But that would have been, under instant replay, that would have been reversed. The Avant thing, also under instant replay, would have been reversed. But don't sit there and start thinking that, you know, my team doesn't win games because, you know, the officials are out to get them. I hate when I hear stuff like that. I can't, you know, and I'm not here to defend officials. They make mistakes. That's why replay is there, to minimize the number of mistakes. The game is fast. But these guys, their own personal reputations are on the line. They make a series of bad calls in games. Guess what? They're not officiating games next year. They might not be officiating games next week. They're evaluated on everything. Bill Carollo, and we had Bill Carollo on this show. How often have you heard the directors of officiating in football and basketball in the conference on a talk show? We had both of them. Why? Because it's an important element of outreach that I thought was important for the fans to hear. How do they do it? How do they go about their job? When you hear a coach complain about it, Bill Carollo explained on this show exactly the procedure they have. Right? They have every play already digitally marked. Coach sends in something on a Monday morning instead of sending a tape, and it used to be they'd send in a tape, and then on Wednesday you get an answer. They get the answers on Monday. They may not be the answers the coach wants to hear. Sometimes it's an answer of, you're absolutely right, we got it wrong. Does it change it? No. Does it change the outcome of the game? No. Significant play in the Penn State game with Ohio State was Brad Barr's holding. Okay? Something that's rarely, if ever, called in that situation. Was it a key moment of the game? Yes. Did it help determine the outcome or the momentum? I think it had something to do with it, especially with the Penn State defense going out there for 3 consecutive possessions. But the last thing you can do as an announcer is dwell on the darn thing. Jack and I didn't dwell on it. Why? because our job is not to officiate the game on the radio. And if I have a question, and I did not do this in the Ohio State game, if I have a question on a call, I can actually, this is how open they are at the Big Ten. Bill Carollo gave each of us, okay, we have a call, I have a number for the command center, I have it in my briefcase all the time. I can call the command center even during the game to get an interpretation from him. That way on the air I get it right. So, I mean, that's, you know, so that's why I want to hear, oh, they're against Penn State. Oh, they're against the Steelers. Oh, they're against the, well, they probably are against the Eagles. No. Or they're for the Giants. Oh, yeah, they don't want the Giants to lose this game because, you know, they've had the hurricane and everything and blah, blah, blah. Oh, come on. I don't think so. Okay? I'm not here to defend them, but at the same time, I don't like dealing with nonsense either. I don't like dealing with nonsense. Never have. It's a waste of time. I mean, do they have bad days? Yeah, they have bad days. Has Ben Roethlisberger and Eli Manning, have they had bad days? Yep. Mike Tomlin and Tom Coughlin have bad days coaching? Yep. Do officials have bad days? Yep. Can it determine a game? Yes. Is it deliberate? No. I mean, that's the part that gets me, is people think it's deliberate. It's not deliberate. I mean, do you think if I have a bad day announcing a game, it's deliberate on my part, I just decide to wake up and tank it that day? Nope. If I have a bad day, it's all by myself. But I always laugh when I hear, oh, the fix is in. Fix is in on what? Now, we did find out in the NBA, Tim Donaghy did fix it. Fix a few along the way. But, for example, I see like a college basketball. You know, Teddy Valentine, I'll give you a good example. Teddy Valentine's worked the national championship game. You get that on merit. Does he call a perfect game? No. Does Teddy make a mistake here and there? Yeah. Okay. Does Teddy call a great game? Yes. Does he need me out there telling everybody, oh, hey, you know, another bad, you know, no. He and I were kidding one time about something. He says, he'll look at me. He says, you got my back, Steve? I said, yeah, Teddy, I always have your back. He says, yeah, I know, you never complain about us. There's a reason why. I don't see the purpose in it. Yeah, mention it, describe it happen, but don't dwell. It's the dwelling part that becomes over the top. We'll dwell on the news next.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can always go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And the Lenape Solar Hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. You can always go to lenapesolar.com. Great to have you with us. Sir, a couple quick things. Number one, it's, you know, if whatever people can do to donate to the Red Cross, I strongly encourage you to do so at redcross.org. And I don't care if you donate $5 or you donate $50. It's irrelevant as to what the number is. Okay? There's no difference between a $50 donation and a $5 donation. It's the fact that you step forward and donated something to help out. Our people need help. I mean, I talked to Dick Girardi this morning. You know when he got power back, sir?
When?
6 o'clock last night.
Crazy.
Okay. This is in Yardley, Pennsylvania. This isn't in New Jersey. Dick lives in Yardley. He got power back at 6 o'clock last night. It's cold. OK, Okay, it's been the 30s here in State College all day, 38 degrees. It's cold in New Jersey. It's cold in southeastern Pennsylvania. It's cold on Staten Island. And I've done a lot of baseball games on Staten Island. Right? Staten Island is a residential, old-time residential section. Okay, it's an island, and it's residential, and it's older buildings. And they were smacked hard by this. Those people are cold. They need money for generators, for blankets, for food, for water. I mean, they ran out of water, for goodness sakes. FEMA ran out of water. So whatever you can do to help them, please, whatever, if you can afford it, if you can afford it, if you can somehow squeeze out a couple of dollars to help out the American Red Cross, please do it. You know, because these are our friends and our neighbors. Okay? And, of course, tomorrow, vote. This early voting thing's worked out great, Sarah. I have voted so far in Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Virginia. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, boy.
Oh! No, I obviously haven't, but I'll go out tomorrow and I'll vote. All right, so, look. You know how we hear about other elections? Like, for example, we hear about the election in Venezuela. Okay, Sarah, in reality, I mean, how much of a joke did all of us think the election in Venezuela was?
Right. A number of places like that.
A number of places around the world that, hey, they went to the polls. Oh, really? Really? And the winner got 98%. Really? I mean, we hear that. But not here. Here, you vote, it counts. And if you don't agree with the candidates, write somebody in. But at least register how you feel. Okay? Simple as that. You know, that's what makes this. There are a long, long list of things that make this the greatest country on earth. Generosity, by the way, being one of them. No country donates more money than this country does. And the Susquehanna Valley is a very, very important part of generosity. But no country gives more than this country does. And part of what makes America great is not just that American spirit, but also the fact that we're allowed to exercise our right to vote. As to whether to look at somebody and say, I want to retain him or her, or I want to fire him or her and replace them with him or her. So, you know, it separates us from everybody. So please, go out, exercise. You may have to wait in some lines tomorrow for obvious reasons. In a presidential election, there are longer waits. But be patient, enjoy it, and hopefully you have a little bit to give to the Red Cross, because there are a lot of people suffering, and they're talking about another nor'easter bearing down up the coast that could bring some snow and some rain. I mean, in Katrina, it was in August, and it was awful. It was terrible. It was destructive. It was also at least warm. Here, this is awful, terrible, destructive, but it's cold. So whatever you can do, if there's anything, if you can't, I totally understand. But I want to at least make that plea, because it's just that important. And whatever we can do to help. Bo Pelini is the head coach at Nebraska. Now, Sarah, I'm going to warn you on this. Okay?
Okay.
This is not going to be Leno. This is going to be pretty dry. It's just the way Bo is. Okay. He's a very matter-of-fact, dry kind of guy. But I want fans to get a feel for Nebraska as to how they're thinking, how their personnel, how it's playing out for them. They're 7-2. Penn State's 6-3. They play 3:30 Saturday. By the way, the Indiana game's a noon kick. That's been announced. Indiana's a noon kick on November 17th. But 3:30 on Saturday in Lincoln, Bo Pelini's press conference on coaching his team and guiding them through some big wins.
You know, there's no magic wand, or you just keep going. You just go back to work. You go back to work the next day to and build off the, obviously, the positive things that happened, and fix the things that need fixed, and keep stressing the things that need to be accomplished to move forward and get better, and keep working to get better as a football team. You know, there's still, you know, for all the positives there are, there's still a lot of things that we need to get better at. We need to, you know, get more consistent at. And the only way I know to do that is to practice, keep stressing it, and keep working the day in and day out to get better, and continue to need to do that. I'm sorry.
Well, is there something about this team's personality that maybe biggest ones you've coached didn't have that makes it so capable of making these comebacks?
Well, I think the guys have a lot of confidence. Obviously, I think there's a lot of heart in this football team, and they don't, you know, they don't panic. They don't stop believing that they're going to be able to get it done. But you know, let's say we haven't had those qualities in the past, but I think we're more capable. I think we're, you know, I said it the other day, you know, when we're good, we're a pretty good football team, you know, and we just got to avoid putting ourselves into some tough situations. And you know, like I said, I don't think there's any magic potion that you take to avoid that. You just keep stressing it, you keep working at it, and try to continually strive for a higher level of execution. You know, it's a tough game.
Well, Taylor said you guys worked a two-minute drill, obviously a lot in practice, and you've seen it at Northwestern and Michigan State, some light drives. What do you see in practice? Are they pretty efficient at it generally?
Yeah, you know, something that we do pretty good amount, especially in the early, you know, in preseason camp. And, you know, Tim does it, you know, we do it offensively for a fairly good amount. You know, we do at least once a week. And, you know, I said the other day, it was ironic that I looked up and there was a minute 20 left on the clock. And that's, you know, I think the first time we do it, first couple times we do it, that's about what we put up there. You know, sometimes we give them one timeout, two timeouts, sometimes no timeouts. So, you know, we've been in that situation and we've been able to execute. And obviously having a quarterback who you have a lot of confidence in, who has some experience now, that, you know, we felt like we were okay. And I thought he managed the situation really well.
Is there anything about Taylor's game or his acumen that makes him proficient in those situations?
Well, he doesn't get, you know, I don't think, you know, I think Taylor's pretty calm and has a lot of confidence. Let's face it. He's getting better as a football player. And as you get better, and you get, you know, your confidence grows, you have some success, and you have a belief that you can go ahead and, in a situation like that, and have success. Hopefully that, you know, I don't want to find myself exactly in that situation again. But well, you know, he's a guy who, you know, I feel can execute when one need be.
Because your guys' offense is a little faster paced, does that have any carryover to helping you guys with that two-minute style?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of times, you know, we're used to being up on the ball and going fast, so I think that does help you.
Hey, Bo, you know, the players are obviously executing better than they were 2 or 3 years ago in those situations. Have you learned to coach those situations differently, or have coaches, had the staff handled it any differently? Because I imagine that it's just as important what you guys are doing as opposed to what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I learn a lot almost every week out, and, you know, as a coach. I mean, let's face it, it feels like I've been doing this for 20 years now, but, you know, every situation's a little bit different. You got to look at the situation and try to make a decision. Like, for instance, the other day, and, you know, when to use the timeouts and how to use your timeouts and you know, look at the situation, and you hope you make the right decisions. And, you know, I do think that, you know, it was just brought up that, you know, I think that it does help us, you know, when we were a slower-paced offense, one that, you know, made a lot of audibles at the line and had to kill, you know, it was kind of using the kill game, and, you know, we weren't as prepared to handle situations like that because we weren't quite as used to going fast. And now it's, you know, we're up on the ball a lot. We're going at the line a lot. Our signaling happens a lot easier. So you're able to get a lot more plays accomplished in a lot shorter amount of time without jumping through a lot of hoops. So that helps you. So, you know, I think to answer the question in a lot of regards, you know, not only the players but the coaches and to a certain extent, the system lends to being able to have success in those situations.
It's pretty rare for you to have three timeouts left in the last 2 minutes of a game. Did you anticipate, you know, that situation throughout the second half and try to hold on to those things? Because often, you know, you use more defense or another situation.
You know, I don't mind as much. You know, sometimes if need be, you know, you call it timeout defensively in the second half. I don't quite as much mind using a defensive timeout or using a timeout earlier in the first half. I try everything I can to avoid that in the second half, knowing in case a situation like that comes up. But, you know, in the first quarter, most of the time, if I feel like I need to do something to settle our guys down or you know, make a particular correction, I don't hesitate in the first half. I try to everything I can to avoid that, you know, in third and fourth quarters.
Did Coach Beck ask for timeouts on the headset that you guys used on offense in the first half, or is that kind of you just seeing
that? Well, I saw what the situation was, you know, kind of what was going on, and I, you know, I talked to him, and, you know, I made the decision in the first half.
So would it be fair to say that 2011, when you back was going to be your quarterback, he said, I want to go fast for XXX.
Well, we talked about it, yeah, and I think Tim wanted to. He was more of a, he'd been around in no huddle, and what I thought was important to be able to do is change tempos as we want to change tempos, and you know, not be locked into doing anything one way all the time, and being able to mix it up, and I know how that affects you defensively, and I thought that was important for us moving forward offensively.
Well, what are the biggest changes you've seen in Jamal from last year to being a guy that Tim trusts to go to in that situation?
Well, Jamal's gotten a lot better as a football player and as a receiver. I mean, there's a guy who, you know, we played him as a true freshman, a guy who played quarterback his whole career, and as talented as he was and is, had a lot to learn, and he still does. He's still growing as a receiver, but, you know, he ran a nice route on that play. And you know, I think he has had a lot better understanding of what we're asking him to do and what defenses are trying to do to him playing in there in the slot. It takes a good feel to play in there.
Was that a tougher adjustment for him than maybe he thought it was going to be going to wide receiver last year, figuring it out?
Oh, yeah. It's not easy. I mean, he's a guy who's has really good football instincts, but, you know, you're not only trying to, I mean, in the last year in the case, you know, learning the system and then, you know, trying to figure out the techniques, the intricacies that it takes to be a good receiver. Because, you know, it's a lot more than just running fast and running good routes and catching the ball. You got to have some savvy. You got to understand how to find holes and zones, especially when you're lined up on the inside, because you have a lot more things to deal with in there. You know, how to bend in your routes, how to really, you know, how to get open, you know, versus the different coverages. And I think he has a lot better understanding of that now.
How'd Marlo come out of that game health-wise? I know he went.
Well, he's sore, but, you know, you know, if I know Timmy, he'll make it, you know, for Saturday. But, you know, we're going to give him today off for sure.
And kind of
shoulder.
What about Rex? What's his status for this week? You guys are trying to get him practice this week.
Yeah, it just depends on how he keeps progressing. He's progressing well, and you know, like I said before, when he's feeling 100%, that's we'll put him back out there.
You played two physical football games in a row. Third one coming up. Is there anything you guys do different this week for recovery to help you guys prepare for Penn State?
Well, we did some things last week to help our guys recover a little bit, and you know. Yeah, as the season goes on, you can't ignore the fact that guys are. It's been a, you know, a physical year. It's been, you know, it's now going on to what, week 9, week 10 if you count the bye, and you know you have to keep that in mind. So yeah, we'll make a few small adjustments.
Is that different than what you guys did in the Big 12 since the Big 10 is a little bit more physical?
Oh, no. I mean, I think you always have to keep that in mind as the year goes on and not ignore the fact that it's not just the physicality of the playing, but the time on your legs, you know, you get injuries, you get guys having to take more snaps here or there. You just got to look at each position and each situation and make sure you have to get your work done and you have to get your, you know, get prepared, because that's obviously what's going to help you play good on Saturdays. But you know, whenever you find a chance, you got to find ways to maybe take a little bit of a load off at times.
Mark Kaczynski said, if you created what you wanted, Clemson's here, you came inside, played some young guys.
talk about the job you feel like he's done over the course of the night.
I think Cass has done a great job. I think he's a heck of a D-line coach. And, I think our guys have gotten better. I think they've played better the last couple weeks. And hopefully that'll continue. You know, we've had to mix and match it a little bit in there. And, you know, we've had some guys that have, you know, kind of played a dual role. And we're going to need that as the season closes out.
Ability to coach up a little bit. I mean, taking an edge, moving to the side, probably the easiest thing to do on the fly. How does it speak to his ability to coach up players in a short amount of time and get them to do what he wants?
Well, he's a good communicator and a good coach, but, we don't, you know, the way we kind of coach our techniques, whether you're playing the end spot or playing inside, whether you're playing on the center, guard, tackle, really the techniques that we're asking them to play and how we're asking them to play technique-wise doesn't change a whole heck of a lot. But obviously it takes a little bit of time and effort to get them to understand all the different responsibilities when it comes to, you know, your pressures and all the different calls that can be made.
Your coaches have spoken to this, Cass, Ross Ells, about looking for junior college guys in this recruiting cycle for your defensive line. Why do you think that's important? What do you gain out of that?
Well, we feel really good about our young guys. First and foremost, you know, the guys that are in the program right now, I think it's a talented group, a really talented group. But there's a little bit of a gap there, and we're not just going to go take some junior college guys. If we find the right guy who's mature and we feel can come in and help us early, we'll take a look at that. But, you know, I'm in no hurry to do that. I mean, I think what they're saying is, you know, we're looking and we'll do our homework, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to go that route. Trust me.
Hey, but was Rex pushing to play or is he being patient?
I think Rex pushes to do everything. but I think he's also being smart on it, and we're making sure that he's going to be smart on it. I haven't said much to him about it, and I'm not going to. I don't want him to feel pressure from me or from anything else. He knows his body, and that's between Rex and the trainers and the doctors first and foremost. And I'm behind him, and we're behind him 100%. Is to, you know, one thing that I know about Rex, if he feels he can play, he's going to play.
That's Bo Pelini talking about Rex Burkhead there at the end, who's been out with that bothered knee for in and out of the lineup. They've gone to Amir Abdullah, who's done a fine job for them. But I'll tell you what problem for Nebraska is this. They are an amazing 7-2, despite the fact they are a -9 giveaway takeaway. They have fumbled the ball, amazingly, 22 times this year. Now, they've lost 14 of them, but they've fumbled 22 times. I mean, that's 2.5 fumbles a game. They recover one a game and give up 1.5 a game, but that's a staggering number. All right. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can always go to purdyinsurance.com. Back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Oh, yeah. Boy, that Shamoka Dam Orchestra. And it sounds like everything sounds like it's the original.
I know. It sounds great. They come in light here, and then it just gets better and better.
You know, they're non-union. You know that?
Oh, well, that's good to know.
And it's interesting. We can call upon them anytime.
That's good. Yeah. They're, I mean, yeah. I'm sure we should put something together, you know?
Kevin's union.
Well, know that much.
The only way Kevin's union is if he's announcing the Philadelphia Union games. All right, top of the hour. CBS News. Gee, I wonder if they might talk about the final day of the campaign.
You think?
I don't know. Purdy Insurance is our sponsor, Market Street in Sunbury. You can go to purdyinsurance.com. Second hour of the show. I'd love to hear from you. 1-800-795-9565.